Hi, my name's Dan Seaman.
And I'm Jeremy Austin.
And welcome to the Perseen Podcast,
where we talk to industry experts and explore topics of interest to internet service providers and network experts everywhere.
Hello, and welcome to episode one of the Perseen Podcast, where we explore topics of interest to internet service providers and networking experts. I'm Dan Seaman, Chief Product Officer for Perseen, and I'm your co-host, along with Jeremy Austin, our Senior Product Manager. Today on the podcast, we'll be giving you some background on the history of Perseen, Attilo Networks, which is the company name and why those things are different, and telling you a little bit about what we do and our personal histories. And hopefully that's going to give you some context going forward into other episodes.
Hey, I'm Jeremy. And, you know, since this is our very first episode, we thought we'd let you in on the history of Perseen, you know, why we created the product and the ways in which we can feel it can have a big impact on ISP operations. But I just want to make it clear that this podcast in general is not going to be all about Perseen or one big advertisement for the product. That's not going to be an interesting story at all. But just getting us started with setting some, some ground rules, the philosophies of why we do things the way that we do, some background on the company and some background on the product, that would be a natural starting point for our first foray into podcasting. So the focus of the podcast going forward will be to talk about industry events, trends, hot topics. We'll dive into super technical areas of interest to ISPs, just like we have on our webinars, and things of interest to network engineers. We'll interview guests from the industry and so on. For example, in our next podcast, episode two, we'll be talking about WISPAPALOOZA, the WISPA show in Vegas. We'll have just come back from that. We'll be sharing our experiences from the event. We'll be chatting about interesting sessions, key themes and takeaways from the show, and lots more. The WISPAPALOOZA is always a way to recharge and reconnect with our friends in the industry. And we always come home with all sorts of topics to talk about. And we look forward to sharing those with you. But for now, let's dive into where we came from, what we do, why Perseen helps ISPs deliver a better experience for their subscribers. So, Dan, can you explain why we mentioned Attilo Networks and Perseen as well?
Yeah, so a little bit of history here. So when myself and the other co-founders decided we were going to start a company, we didn't know exactly what we were going to do. So we chose a kind of generic company name that Attilo happens to be Waterloo, missing a W and an O. So that's kind of how that happened. After that, we launched a product, one product we'll talk about a little bit that we actually ended up discontinuing, and then Perseen after that. So Perseen is essentially the product brand. Attilo is a company. You probably don't know Attilo at all, and that's okay.
Is Attilo Waterloo with a little packet loss?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with letter loss. Yes.
Letter loss. Yeah, absolutely. So, how did you guys get started? Now, who are the founders? What made you want to start a company together, and pick ISPs as the target?
So the co-founders, myself, Garrett, and Scott. So Garrett Nagelhout, Scott Loach. So we all worked together at Sandvine for a long time, which is another networking vendor that worked with service providers. So, I mean, the service provider part there is kind of secondary. But yeah, we worked together. We all kind of came to the same conclusion at roughly the same time that we wanted to try to do our own thing and decided to take a leap and give it a go. The first thing we worked on actually was a video caching product for kind of bandwidth constrained areas. That's something, it's called Night Shift, and we shut it down a long time ago. It's kind of an example of something that, you know, we had some moderate success with it, but it was never really going to take off. And it had a lot of kind of external dependencies, which informed us a little bit in what we wanted to build in the future. But I think the biggest thing that informed that is just past history. Like yourself, I spent most of my career working with service providers. So when it came time to look for something else, it was a really kind of obvious place to look for something and like a real problem that we could solve for customers that we actually care about and like a lot.
So tell me a little bit about that. You said, you know, you spent some time working with ISPs. I mean, I can talk about my experiences at ISPs all day, but how did you get started with, with ISP technologies personally?
Yeah. So I think like a lot of people, I think you're going to have kind of a similar story too, is I started an internet provider because I needed internet. Like that's fundamentally what happened. So
the old story.
Way back in dial up days. And that this was like dial up time when I started my little internet provider, there was no other options. So ended up starting one in the community, ran that for a few years, it grew it to a decent, not like for a dial up ISP, grew that up and eventually sold that off. Ended up working as a network admin at a larger ISP for a while, where, you know, that was kind of leading into the DSL era. So some, you know, big D slams. That was where I first got my first experiences with fixed wireless. So Alvarian radios, if anyone remembers all that fun back in the day. So that was great. You know, I learned a lot, did that. And then because I had started the company in high school, then I decided, well, I better go to university. So I did that for 6 years, then ended up joining the networking vendor and working there. And then eventually, you know, we left to start Atomos. So yeah, I basically spent all my career, working career anyway, with service providers of some size, from small ones to big ones. And having done both small and the really, really big ones, I much prefer the small. So it's a lot more fun working with kind of local and regional providers in my mind than it is working with some of the tier ones. They adopt things faster. You get to know the people better. It's not giant bureaucracies. And that's one of the reasons why Perseum is so much fun for us, because, you know, we get to help companies that we really like.
So, you know, that's a really good point there. You know, we do love local and regional providers. And I like you, have worked, you know, both at super small and fairly large, but not the largest ISPs in the US, for example. You know, I'm in the United States, Dan's in Canada. And as we see the wireless ISP and just the ISP industry in general of local and regional providers continuing to grow, it's been super, super high growth rate the past few years. Is that changing Perseum's philosophy in any way, or are we growing to adapt to our market changing?
I don't think it changes anything. So what we say, our mission and vision, I guess, is to help local and regional providers thrive and really help them beat the big guys, right? Like, we want to help the little guys beat Comcast. You know, that's kind of the thing we want to do. And I don't think that's changed at all. I mean, there's thousands of those companies that are smaller than Comcast and AT&T and T-Mobile and Charter and all those. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter the access technology. We just want to make them more successful. We focused on fixed wireless because it was an obvious place to start, given the quality problems that a fixed wireless network can have, given the typical company size. But that's not our focus in its entirety, right? Like, we want to help all access technologies. So I don't think it's changed anything, but certainly as we add more fiber and other features like that, then maybe the mix of companies is going to change a bit.
That does make sense. So I've been with Perseum just about a couple years here. And I've seen, you know, some really fantastic growth in the company. How has that changed the company? You know, when you started with three founders, you know, there's a kind of this natural division of labor. You figure out who's good at what and you do it. And then as you start to outsource those functions, how does that change the company at all, or does it?
It definitely changes. And I think we're still going through the change. So I kind of, maybe this is getting a little bit too detailed, but I sometimes think we're in the awkward teenager size, where we're big enough that we need some process and all that stuff, and we're getting better at it, but we're not fully grown up and we don't kind of have it all internalized yet. So I think that's just perfectly normal growing pains for any company. So I don't think it's any, you know, in any way good or bad or set for us, but it changes a lot. Like, I mean, anybody, you know, that's listening, that's run an ISP, when you started it, you did everything. You climbed the towers, you configured the radios. And at some point, you have to stop doing one of those things, and deciding which ones you stop and which ones you don't and who to trust with what is, I think, probably a real challenge for any business that's growing. So one thing you kind of skipped, Jeremy, is talking about your history.
Okay. Sure. So I similar to Dan, and similar to so many in the wireless ISP industry, I started getting into making internet happen. That's kind of just the phrase I used for a long time. I make internet happen at a similar age, just out of high school, and because I wouldn't have had internet otherwise. Actually, even in high school and earlier on, I was already doing, you know, networking between buildings and, you know, stringing coax and unshielded twisted pair and, you know, early networking technologies of the day at fairly low bit rates. But
Pringles can Wi-Fi.
That came a little bit later. So this is well before the Wi-Fi era. This is Wi-Fi didn't exist yet, right? Mm-hmm. So in 98, Wi-Fi, you know, hit the mass market with the, you know, the first iBook. And pretty quickly thereafter, people learned that you could put a Pringles can with a carefully tuned length of wire, and you could do the super long range Wi-Fi. You know, at the time it would steal from your neighbors who have DSL, but not that I ever did anything like that, but I did love to experiment with these antenna types. And I began building wireline ISPs first because I was able to, you know, set up modem banks, set up dial up, just like Dan did, and very quickly pivoted to doing DSL as DSL equipment started to hit the market. So I built, you know, the first villages in Alaska where I grew up that had complete 100% wired and wireless coverage, because then you'd, you know, run a wire to the building, put up a wireless access point, and presto, you were connected. We were still very constrained in backhaul, being in rural Alaska. So I learned a number of techniques of, you know, those long range antennas to be able to do your own backhaul. And from there, you know, all kinds of microwave technologies were, you know, coming down the pipe with, you know, revolution after revolution. So I've lived through basically all of the different access technologies and, yeah, and changes that we've had since leaping from dial-up and on into the fiber era. So in the past, let's say the past 10 years, I've spent a lot of that concentrating entirely on what I would call network engineering, rather than all of the other things that go around with, you know, the things that computers can do. Name it, I've probably done it. Maybe not well, but you know, for a long time, I was such a generalist that I said, I don't specialize in anything. I don't have any time to specialize. So I did network engineering, eventually worked for one of the larger regional providers here in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest as a senior network engineer, and began to pivot into product management while I was at that company as we were rolling out new access technologies and new types of monitoring. So I was doing product management for monitoring. And from there, it was a natural move to come to Preseam, because a lot of what we do is monitoring related, and everything that we do is about local and regional providers. And I've always been very passionate about that. That's where I've you know, got my experience and where my friends are. And it's a job that I can feel really good about, that we're helping people at the end of the day.
Yeah, we mentioned Wispapalooza is coming up next week. I think the first time I remember seeing you or meeting you, I think you were talking about going up to the top of mountains to deal with problems with radios and how you have to take a boat to get to one of the towers you were managing and stuff, which was very different experience than certainly I had. Like, the area I grew up is rural, but it's not like that.
But not remote. Yeah, yeah, there's a difference between rural and remote, absolutely. Even with extreme weather conditions, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
In fact, I'll be talking about that at Wispapalooza. We'll be dealing with resiliency and reliability. I'm in one of those sessions, and it'll probably be over by the time you hear this. But learning how to build for extreme conditions where you can't reach something a lot of the year is an important part of that process. And I can tell you times when I did it well and times when I didn't do it well. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess following on the Wispapalooza thread, I think that the first time we ever really talked was one night at Wispapalooza for like 3 hours on like philosophies of all kinds of networking things and everything else. So yeah, when we get going on deep things, we can talk for a while. So I imagine that's going to be some interesting topics on the podcast in the future. So
absolutely. Mm-hmm. For now, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Preseam itself as a product, what it does right now, and how it helps your ISP. Welcome back to the Preseam podcast. Dan, I want to talk a little bit more about what Preseam itself does. And I also want to point out that the Preseam podcast is not about Preseam. It's about the industry, the characters, the players, the technology, the things that make us excited to go to work in the morning. So tell me a little bit, Dan, about the evolution of Preseam from its first iteration to its present state. And in that process, you'll end up telling me what it is, because it's kind of a made up word, right?
Yeah. So I guess we want to go there. The made up word was when we decided we were building this thing, we didn't have a name for it. We were bouncing around a bunch of ideas. And then at one point in the conversation, I remembered that years earlier, I had registered Preseam.com on a whim. I think I was sitting in LaGuardia Airport coming up with domain names and registered it at the time. So that's basically where the name came from. And the requirements there were you can say it over the phone, people can spell it after they hear it, and you can get the .com. And that's really the entirety of those requirements. So I mean, the genesis of Preseam is recognizing, I think, what is a very big change in network management, and then kind of taking it from that step on. And that big change is that complex things like DPI and kind of traditional traffic management was no longer necessary or even desirable to deliver a good quality experience. And the reason that happened is because of advances in queue management. We could probably do a whole dedicated session where we can deep dive into some of this stuff. But fundamentally, it's a way to achieve good quality of experience, like from a customer perspective, latency, throughput, you know, all those kind of key network behaviors, without the complexity associated with identifying individual applications and creating rules. And, you know, as you mentioned, we do have some history in that space, so we know a little bit of something about it. And then combined with that, recognizing that it's getting harder and harder to do those things because of encryption and more UDP-based traffic and QUIC and all those things. And those two curves were intersecting where it's just not going to be worthwhile anymore. So we decided to build around that idea as kind of the core of the traffic management side. But really, I think the key thing that I think we're really focused on is like quality of experience is not just traffic shaping. And I think that's kind of a real mistake or misnomer I see people doing now. You really need to understand the subscriber experience first. You need to be able to kind of tie that back to topology to understand where the problems are. You have to really understand the access network and be able to do some deep kind of, I don't like the word analytics, but like analytics on the data that you get from the network to identify the problems and enable the operation of the network to be proactive from the standpoint of optimizing like the customer experience. And when you do all those things, then traffic management can do its job. And I see often people are kind of jumping to step three, not realizing that step three can't work without step one and two. And I think maybe, you know, you're probably going to ask kind of what are the differentiators and stuff. And I think that's really the our focus is on those three legs of that stool, because if you don't do all three, you're not going to deliver as good an experience. And the traffic management is just, it's almost like the last piece. And in some sense, the simplest isn't right, but in some sense, the easiest.
It should be the easiest if it's done correctly. But when we talk about access network, let's define that a little bit, I think, because we may have some listeners who don't use that term specifically, and they may think, okay, well, this is perceived as a product for fixed wireless only. Can you explain a little bit about what we mean when we say access network?
Yeah, so access network, in the way that we generally use it, is kind of like the edge of the network and a residential and commercial network. So in a fixed wireless network, it's access points. In a cable network, it's CMTSs. DSL network, it's DSLAMs. In a fiber network, it's OLTs. So that's kind of like the access edge. The other way that access is sometimes used is kind of the piece between the core and those edge elements. So sometimes you'll see some vendors talk about that as like the access network versus the access elements. We tend to just kind of talk about the access elements as, I guess, that edge as the access network. So
in most of the local and regional providers, that second layer is going to be backhaul or middle mile, for example.
Yeah, I prefer people call it something else other than mixing those two things up for sure. Yeah.
So technically the entire thing from the core out, you know, is sort of your distribution and access, but not everybody differentiates at quite the same point. So when we say access network, we're usually talking about that last bit of technology.
Yeah. I mean, the other way to think about it is we're focused on the customers at the end, which is kind of like a fundamentally different order than the network elements in the network, right? Like you might have an access point with, you know, 150 subscribers off it, or a CMTS with 1,000 customers off it. The order of magnitude of the things that we're trying to track individually is typically higher than like what you would do in, say, an NMS or something, where you're unlikely to put end customers in your network management system. It just doesn't scale. It's way too noisy.
Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit, because that is a kind of unique differentiator of Precene, both the scale and that focus on the end customer. What do we do that's different about how we handle that data about the end customer? You know, because there are lots of management platforms for managing, you know, both data and metadata about the end customer. What's different about what we do?
So we measure a lot of stuff. So we essentially get two sources of data. We have an inline network appliance that is taking traffic measurements as the subscriber's traffic flows through. So latency loss, you know, throughput, all that kind of stuff. And then we also extract a lot of information from the network itself via polling, say like SNMP polling to an AP or HTTP interface for a vendor that uses that. And we combine all those things together to do analysis and provide information that allows the operator to be proactive. So one of the early examples of this, and maybe one of the things that we're better known for, is our fixed wireless report, because we were able to collect real-world performance data across hundreds of internet providers. we can combine that together and publish a picture of what actual access point equipment is capable of in the real world, which if you've read our report is quite different than some of the marketing numbers, for example. And it's really that huge kind of pool of data that we can leverage and provide comparisons and, you know, do things like tell people that this particular access point is essentially underperforming by scoring it against all the other access points in the world configured the same way and allow them to be proactive in a way that's just, it requires a lot of manual work. So that's kind of what I get back to that comment of, you can't just do traffic management. Like in the sense that traffic management is the last piece of when the network is clean. If you don't have some way of understanding these things and knowing if you're pushing the equipment too far or what it should be capable of, that last step is just not going to, it's not going to have the results you'd like because there's other problems to fix first.
That's right. There's actually some really interesting things, you know, coming from the outside about working with this data is that it is very granular, and that's a real differentiator for us, where we have, not only the ability to determine how things are working in the field, but also the ability to give that back to the operators to actually influence their operational control of the network. Like, it's nice to know, and all the vendor tools let you know, how well is this equipment running? But that's different from understanding what's actually optimal from a global perspective. Like, what's the point at which I'm going to get my best ROI? And we're going to have some new features coming out, in the next few months as well, that are going to be even more detailed on, you know, the types of data that we can process on behalf of our customers, include things like real world recommendations on, well, at what point am I driving this equipment too hard? And that's something that, you know, you've been able to sort of indirectly experience. And so many operators who have, you know, say you've got that RF expert on staff, they've learned that through some years of experience. It's not something that you get overnight. And we want to be able to really shorten that time to a full understanding, a full knowledge of how to best deploy any equipment, whether it's old or whether it's new. There's another thing I wanted to ask about, Dan, which is what are some of the things that we'll be talking about at the show?
Without going into too much detail on some of our features, certainly those scores that, you know, the things that you've been working on are still a major thing that we're introducing to customers. We just launched that a while back in the spring. So there's been some extensions there. And really we're working to kind of flesh out the rest of the model there. Like we've got a lot more information that we don't yet have in the UI. So we're starting to build that in. We'll be able to talk about some of that stuff. The diagnostics kind of give people a bit of a textual description of a problem. So with the goal of giving non-technical people kind of a clear instruction of what the problem probably is. So we've been able to enhance those, kind of make your L1 team, you know, be able to decide if there's an RF problem, for example, easier than they could having to escalate, I guess, is probably another way of saying that. So extensions of all that. We, you know, under the hood, Roadmap Rise, of course, we're working on some of the plan stuff that Jeremy touched on there. Maybe you could explain a little bit more of that, of course, and you know, fiber and other access technologies. Like a lot of our customers are fixed wireless today, but we have many customers that also run their fiber and their cable networks through us. So what we don't have yet is we don't have dedicated kind of views in the UI for those other access technologies. And that's all, you know, an obvious direction that we're pushing on as well.
Yeah.
But maybe you could talk a bit about, you know, some of our thoughts and dreams and prototypes on the plan stuff that we're working on.
Absolutely. Like one of the things that's difficult to tell today is how much true oversubscription is occurring in your network. I mean, we have some metrics in Preseam today, which let you tell, approximately how much you're oversubscribing. But once you start actively shaping, and this is, I think, something that is that's really underexplored, I think, in this problem space. Preseam isn't alone in being the only AQM solution. But what we're doing that's unique is we're looking at exactly how much compression is occurring and how much you're able to deliver of a particular plan. So, for example, one of the ways in which people try to optimize is to make sure that, say, a speed test always looks good, no matter how much bandwidth is actually available. And maybe that's something that you can sell to your customers, but we believe that you shouldn't have to do that. You should be able to offer a good experience no matter how much load the network is under. And ideally, you're in a situation where the customer never feels like they need to reach for a speed test because everything is running well. So consequently, you may end up in a situation where a customer really does need to upgrade to a bigger plan because they're maxing their plan out. And we want to be able to let you know immediately who is eligible for an upgrade, who needs an upgrade, who doesn't need to upgrade. And that'll allow you to actually optimize how much revenue you're making across your network, because deciding how what plans to serve and how many people to put on an access point and how to configure that access point, those are things that are relatively painful to determine today. And because we have the data that really captures the full picture of the performance of an access point, not just how it's doing at the RF layer, but also how the traffic that flows across it affects that RF layer, how those two things interact, we're going to be able to give you some really concrete directions on here's exactly how I should optimize my network. And that's something that's really exciting. We've been working on that for a little while, and look for that in the future.
Mm-hmm. And that little the piece you mentioned there, I guess I may have kind of skimmed it a little bit, but the measuring the experience from the customer's traffic is important there, because you end up with understanding, you don't necessarily know where the problem is when that shows you problems, because it could be any hop in the path, but at least you know the problem exists. And what we've done with this kind of deep integration with the access network and the RF in this case is giving you the tools to, of course, be proactive, but also identify where that part of the access network is likely the cause of those subscriber quality problems. But it's really neat to look at it just on a traffic level too, because you know, it's looking for behaviors. It's not looking for individual symptoms. And you might see a behavior like, well, the packets are being reordered. There's a whole bunch of different reasons that could happen. That could be, you know, two routers and with bonded links that are misconfigured, or, you know, not path flapping, but lots of different reasons that could happen. But just being able to identify it's there gives you a really kind of powerful tool to go kind of dig down and figure out where that might be happening along that individual network path. So all these things, these three things, like this measuring the subscriber experience, this deep understanding of the access network and the traffic management, they all kind of flow together to give the providers the tools they need to be proactive. And like Jeremy said, there's a small number of people that will run speed tests all the time. Like, you know, maybe it's some of us, right? Like, but the vast majority of subscribers and customers, they're only doing that when they already feel pain. Like they don't get... Most people don't get joy out of running speed tests like some of us geeky people do, right? Like they only do it when they have to. So let's you know, get the network provisioned right so that they just don't even think about it.
Absolutely. In the perfect world, the internet is just there like air and water all the time, and you don't have to think about it. And
yeah,
I think our job as ISPs is to, you know, make that happen for the right amount of money, if possible, you know. One of the things that I ask, I mean, we should probably end with this, but when someone is thinking about, okay, I want to implement a particular traffic management scheme on my network, and I say this out of experience because I have been there. I've done all of the different kinds of methods there are to squeeze blood out of a turnip and make more bandwidth appear magically when there isn't any more to be had. And when I think of, if I'm going to implement a new feature, is this something that customers are willing to pay for? Because if you think about it from the perspective of, is this feature going to save me money as an ISP? That's helpful. That's a good thing to know. But in the long run, it's, will the customer actually pay for it? Like, it doesn't make the customer's world materially better.
Or even if it's pay for it in the sense of they don't churn. It doesn't have Correct. To be net new dollars. They have to value it.
Correct. Is this something that the customer values in the experience? And so that's just a little philosophical check I run when I'm thinking about a particular implementation, whether that's on my own home network, like, is this something that's going to make things better overall rather than better for like one particular person or one particular application or one particular
time? So I think we should probably do a separate episode on this. Where I come from on that is, let's solve the root of the problem, not just keep adding hacks on top. And that's like fundamentally what I feel about things like choosing individual protocols to prioritize to give them a good experience. Like, why don't we just make the network deliver a good experience for all the traffic so we don't have to make those choices? And the tools and the techniques, they exist. And this kind of data analysis layer that we're adding on top lets operators be proactive to get there without that additional complexity. And that's always something that we try to look for internally too, is like, what's the simplest way to solve this problem? What's the root of the problem? Not just what can we layer on top to kind of make the problem go away? Because the world doesn't get any better by just layering more complexity on more complexity on more complexity.
Absolutely.
Well, that brings us to the end of the first episode of the Perseem podcast with myself, Dan, and Jeremy. We hope we found that useful, a little bit of history of us personally, where we're coming from, and a little bit of Perseem, of course. As we've mentioned a couple times, this will not be dedicated to Perseem the product. We'll be talking about all kinds of interesting networking and industry things moving forward.
If you have any questions about the show, maybe you want to suggest topics, find show notes and links to other resources, you'll find us on the web at preseem.com/podcast. On the next episode, we'll be recapping the Wispapalooza show in Vegas. We'll be chatting about our favorite sessions, new technology that we saw, things that excited us, fun people that we got to hang out with. Until then, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to check us out at preseem.com. Have a great day.